welcome everybody to the Furlough Bros podcast. This is our first maiden voyage of a podcast. We'll be talking about some interesting stuff today. I am Matthew Furlough, and my co-host is James Furlough.
Hello.
All right, James. So as we kind of get into this, kind of give people a little background on who we are, you want to start with a brief introduction about yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name, as we already established, is James Furlough. Oh, this is going to be fun. I can already tell. And I work for Hewlett Packard, and so I'm a marketing analyst type of guy. So I'm, you know, into marketing and numbers and business and technology, things like that. I also have a bunch of side projects, which I'll probably slowly talk about and reveal over the coming time. But mainly, I probably am best to represent myself as an HP employee, which means with that comes all like the disclosures, right? Like when I have something to say about HP, it is me talking, not HP officially. If I say we, that's an accident. I mean to say I, and you know, all that fun stuff. So that's me.
All right. So
who are you, Matthew?
I am a mechanical engineer. I'm currently an employee of Genentech. So the topics that we talk about probably won't skirt too much with them, but same thing applies if we do ever talk about Genentech. It is strictly my opinions and not the opinions of Genentech. But as far as what I am interested in, I'm currently in the middle of getting a computer science degree. And on top of my mechanical engineering degree, I've got a lot of interest in computer technology, and I've been following it for years, following the companies, following the technology, and I like to think of myself as a well-read computer guy. So that's the perspective I'll be sharing. So as far as the, for people who are just kind of listening to this for the first time, I think I want to set the stage for what we want this show to be about. We have spent a lot of time and thought just studying different companies and what I like to call the corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations going back and forth.
Yes.
And the people working for them, the products they're designing, the marketing campaigns, the technology beneath them. And since we both grew up in the Silicon Valley, those companies tend to be high technology centric companies.
Perfect. That's exactly what we're here to do.
All right.
So with that, should we talk some tech?
I cannot tell you how excited I am to do that. So, tell me, James, what are interesting projects that you have going on in your life right now?
Yeah, so currently a lot of my stuff is web-focused. I'm working on this this cool report for my, I guess, former real estate agent, since he's no longer my real estate agent, since I bought a place. But it's this graph that allows him to it's this report with a bunch of graphs, really. That gives them an idea of like how the area is doing real estate wise. So it's pretty cool putting that together and figuring out ways to automate it so that hopefully someday we can sell it to other real estate agents in the area wanting to, you know, give their clients kind of a sense of, you know, how's the market doing, that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool.
That is very cool. Is this going to be something that people will be able to easily access, not just the real estate agents, or is this kind of a...
Well,
what's the access level going to be?
The idea would be like a real estate agent, at least for starters, would have to upload their MLS data. And then I think over time we can figure out ways to partner with MLS services. That's the multiple listing subscribers list. You know, it just says here's all the properties that have been sold and, you know, on the market and how much they sold for, all that kind of stuff. And just so you guys know, we are doing this on the cheap at home. And so on occasion, you will get to experience the Furlough clan, not just the Furlough brothers. A ringing phone in the background would be an example of that. but anyways, so that's the idea. So the real estate agent would be the one who makes it, would, you know, get the data, put it together, choose which graphs to show, how to show it, that kind of stuff, and then they would like publish it, and then they could share that published link with their clients. And then that link itself would be, you know, available 24/7 whenever they wanted to go on and look at it, and it could be updated monthly, quarterly, whatever it is. So that's kind of the idea behind it.
Oh, I like it. I could see how that would be a really useful tool for, you know, for everybody involved.
Exactly.
Very cool.
How about you, man? So, what have you up to? I'm sure it's a little bit different than mine.
Yeah, I've actually been I've had a lot of interest in microprocessors for a long time. You know, it's computers are awesome in that, you know, you've got a keyboard connected to a monitor and a really powerful process behind that. But I'm also interested in less common forms of computers. So one of the things I've been working on, I carpool to my job every morning, I take a bus every morning, and during the bus, you know, I've got this little trackpad on my computer that I can use, but I wanted something a little more dynamic and, you know, like a mouse, but obviously, you know, on a bus, a mouse can be hard to use, you gotta find a flat surface. So I was kind of in the market for something like that. I wasn't quite sure what I was looking for, and I stumbled upon this really great tutorial on how to convert a Wii nunchuck from the Wii gaming console into a mouse.
Well, that's awesome.
I was pretty excited about it. Especially since it's about $20 for a brand new Wii nunchuck. It was $16 for the microprocessor and $4 for the cable. So, nice. You know, all in all, it's a $40 mouse. So, get it to work.
That's a reasonable mouse, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, and so all the package came one night late last week, and I got everything together, and so I decided I'd play around with it for a little bit, and 7 hours later, I finished the project.
Nice.
got to bed a little bit late that night, but the board that I'm using, the microprocessor, it's called a Teensy microprocessor. I'm programming it with the Arduino environment. For those of you that are familiar with microprocessors, you'll recognize that name. Really, really powerful language. And basically how it works is I've got the joystick controls the mouse, and the whole idea is you move it a little and it moves slowly, move it a lot, it moves quickly, and then I've been playing with the settings on it, and I like how it moves. The Z button, the big button, is your left click. So if you want to double click on something, select something, drag, you just click and hold. Works just like the normal button. And the C button, now this is where I got crazy. The C button, if you hold that down, it's like holding down the scroll wheel. So you hold that down, then you move the joystick, and you can scroll around your web page, scroll around your document. Really easy to scroll with, which is nice because, you know, I spend a lot of time on the internet, and so I'm reading documents and stuff like that. So it's kind of easy to use. And then, of course, what's a mouse without the right click? So I had to find, since a Wii Nunchuck only comes with two buttons, I had to find a novel solution for that. And so what I do is I hold down both buttons, and when you release them, it registers a right click, which was kind of a challenge the first time I played a few games, because a lot of them use the right click, and so I had to get used to it's the one click for the left click and then the double click for right click.
But
it works really well, and I've been really pleased with it. I'm using it right now, as a matter of fact.
So this is the nunchuck piece of it, right? The smaller of the two.
Correct.
Okay.
Not the actual wand that you point. Yeah. All it has, it fits. It's really ergonomically designed. Fits in your hand really nicely, and it's only got two buttons and a little joystick. Originally, it actually came with a accelerometer, and I kind of debated about using that functionality. But after reading a few forums, I decided that, as cool as that would be, it didn't quite fit my needs, so I decided to forego that and just stick with the joystick and the two buttons. And I've actually been really pleased with it, so I'm pretty glad I did that.
Well, if we ever get a website, we'll have to post a picture of that, because that I'd like to see it myself.
Yeah.
Nice, very cool.
So that has been what's been going on. So that's my something interesting. So you know, like the elephant in the room, as it is October 3rd, 2011.
Oh man,
there's a small event going on tomorrow morning, as I hear it.
Dude, I'm so excited. I've been like practically peeing myself just a little bit over the last 24 hours. I'm just like, so here's where I'm at. I mean, so here I'll give a little bit of an overview. Basically, Apple has an event coming up, and the title of it is Let's Talk iPhone. And officially, that's all we know. iOS 5, which is their latest version of the operating system, is coming, and there's some cool features related to that. And then it's probably going to be new hardware. But outside of that, that's officially all that we know. And here's my situation. I own an iPhone 3G, not a 3GS, a 3G. So I'm actually like a few models back. And what happened is we because of hardware breaking and, you know, getting married and all that stuff, it all happens. My timing got off from Apple. And so I actually bought my iPhone 2 years ago last January. And so, So my 2 year contract actually ended in January. And so, you know, at the time it was like, hey, let's just, you know, Jesse, my wife, goes, let's just get an iPhone 4. I'm like, or not. Let's wait until the summer and a whole 6 months, and then we'll get whatever the latest and greatest is.
And right, because Apple has traditionally released the product middle of July, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they'll announce it in June. It'll be awesome. You'll drool for like 2 weeks to a month, and then you actually get it. And that was the plan. And this year, Apple decided to wait until October 4th to hold their event. So I'm pretty much to the point now where they could come out with the iPhone 3G Revisited or Remix, and I would buy it. I'm just, yeah, pretty much.
It could be a downgrade from the iPhone 4.
Yeah, that would be okay. And so pretty much this, for me, this event should be called the iPurchase. Because that's what it's going to turn out to be.
I totally understand that, and I too have been very excited. But I come from a little bit of a different perspective. I've actually never spent any of my own money on an Apple product. I own an iPod Classic that was purchased for me for my birthday a few years back. I still use it, still love it. I actually might have accidentally washed it in the dishwasher, in the clothes washing machine.
Ooh.
Earlier last week, but I believe it's still working. Just had to let it dry out a bit. I also had an iPod Touch for a while, the second generation, and I really, really liked it. That too met a watery end, so I have been looking to make my first purchase, but currently I'm not necessarily going to buy a smartphone. So I'm really excited about it, but for a slightly different reason, not because I'll probably be buying one.
Right.
So obviously, James, you're to the point where, you know, whatever it is, you'll get it, but what is it that you're hoping it is?
Oh man, that's a great question. Well, basically, I mean, I'll take pretty much anything at this time, but it would be awesome to get like more memory. I have a 16 gig iPhone 3G, and I've just recently started to hit the ceiling on my memory, which, you know, isn't bad for having it for over 2 years. But I'm ready to go up to like 32 at least. Would be nice. And the latest rumors say that there might even be a 64 gigabit one. Which, you know, that would be pretty tempting. I don't know. I don't know. 32 is probably more than enough for me at this point in time in my life. Honestly, though, the biggest feature that I'm most excited about is the camera, because I take a lot of pictures, and I want to take a lot of videos, and the 3G just doesn't do that. I've, like, got some program that, like, hacks it together where it's pretty much like, oh, we're using the camera app and just taking a whole bunch of little pictures. Oh, and the recording voice thing just so happens to be on, and so it's kind of like a video, right? and that's about the quality of it too. And so I'm ready to bump up on that. Actually, like, the one I'm the most excited about. Though it'll just be nice getting Game Center, because I can't have that right now. it'll also be nice not having a slow phone. I updated to the 4.0 iOS when it, you know, originally came out, and it pretty much turned my phone into an iBrick. Even today I was using my Maps app, and it totally froze while typing in what I was looking for in the, you know, in the map. And so I had to, like, shut it down and restart it, and, you know, and then it finally worked. But even then, it was just, it's slow as dirt, and it's just annoying. My wife didn't update hers, and hers actually still works pretty fast, which is also kind of annoying. But I got folders, so take that. Yeah, it really wasn't worth the update. But I didn't know it at the time, right? So I'm excited to be able to, like, have all the features and have it be at a speed that it should be at. I'm just excited for, like, the, you know, like, Game Center. Once again, you know, something that I just haven't had an opportunity to have yet, and I'm looking forward to getting it. I'm trying to remember, like, you know, it'd be cool if it was, like, a bigger screen, like everyone's talking about. I guess that'd be cool. I don't know if I need it. I don't know if I care. I hope that it's the faster processor, because, I mean, the iPhone 4 is fast, but I think it can be even faster, which would be kind of cool. I think, because, like, the iPad's just, like, wicked fast, and it'd be neat if it was.
Oh, yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it'd be cool if it was at that speed. I'm trying to think. What else would I... Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at. Am I missing any, like, potentially, like, you know...
Well, a few of the things that I think there are rumors of happening. Number one, currently the iPhone 4, the latest edition, has it has 512 megabytes of RAM, so half gigabyte of RAM. And there are persistent rumors that not only will it have the A5 processor, which is what the iPad 2 has, also a dual core processor, it will also have a gig of RAM, which is more than the iPad 2, I believe. Actually, don't quote me on that. I might be wrong. But the thing is that with that much RAM, you're going to be able to really easily cache websites and have a lot of really big games on it. You know, one of the things I'm sure you experience is when you open a website, the website works great, but as soon as you go and look at another website, you lose the old website, and you have to reload it as soon as you go back to it, right?
Yeah.
That would be a thing of the past with a gig of RAM. It would start to act like a more modern browser where it's able to hold all of that website, the compiled website, in its memory and just give you the final product as soon as you switch back. Or at the very least, you'd have to have 20 windows open before it starts to have issues with it. And so that to me, I think, is something that a lot of people who use their iPhone as their primary web surfing device will really appreciate about an upgrade. Even beyond the iPhone 4, which took care of a lot of those problems to begin with.
Yeah, that's true.
So
what would you say is, like, going to be, like, the most significant update? You know, like, I don't necessarily say game changer, but when you're like, you know, we look at this a year from now, we go, boom, that was huge. I think, like, Retina display on iPhone 4 was pretty big time.
Right.
On the last one, and we didn't even talk about that, like, on iOS 4 and iPhone 4, what was the biggest one? And then talk about 5 if you want.
Yeah, I you know that's a great place to start. I think you know Apple obviously billed FaceTime as the headliner of
that's true.
That's the new killer thing that was coming with the iPhone 4, and I think that you know a year later, and this is just my perspective, is that what people have really appreciated about the iPhone 4 wasn't FaceTime. Ironically, it was really. Like you said, it's the Retina display, very, really, really crisp, high resolution display. It's industrial design. I still look at the iPhone 4 and think that, wow, that is a good looking device. I'm actually not looking forward to a upgrade in the design of the iPhone. I hope it doesn't happen because I think that the iPhone 4's design is so great. And I just think it's a great looking device. And I think that that's something that was really, you know, people hold it and they like how it feels. It doesn't feel cheap. It feels sturdy and it looks great. It's one of those, you know, weird ones that, you know, yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with the technology and from a microprocessor or a processor perspective. But, you know, as a mechanical engineer, I have deep appreciation for a well-designed body. You know, and how they actually manufacture that. There's a lot of technology that goes into that. And that was a really big upgrade from the iPhone 3GS, which had a plastic body that I think kind of gave it a feel of, I don't want to say cheapness, but it allowed the Android phones that were coming out at the time to easily compete from a how they feel in your hand perspective.
Well, it totally makes sense because the metal body impinges upon the antenna. And so, you know, that's the nice part about plastic, right? Energy. What are those things called? The waves going through the air. there we go. That'll sound awesome later. It doesn't impede it, which is what's nice about the plastic, which is why they went with glass for their back because, you know, it accomplishes the same output, which is nice.
Exactly. But it's, you know, unfortunately, it does have a little bit higher shatter rate than plastic, but its hardness is far superior than plastic. So its ability to take a really hard impact, especially direct on the back, it's or the front, it's much more likely to survive that and protect the internal components than a plastic case. And I think you really feel that when you hold the phone.
Yeah, I totally agree. So that's iPhone 4. What do you think is going to be like the big deal on 5?
So I think you're going to see a little bit more of the same in that, you know, I think that you're going to have this continual upgrading of the quality of manufacturing. I think they realized that that was a really big selling point, even though they didn't bill it very highly. I think that an upgrade in processor, the dual core, better graphics, better internet connectivity. I think there's a possibility that they might even incorporate an LTE type standard
where you really have a phone that's.
You know, there's a lot of rumors going around about it, and I think I actually am inclined to think that that's wishful thinking. I wouldn't be surprised at all if that's not included tomorrow, but also I wouldn't be shocked if that came along with it. One of the things that Apple has been pushing for years. Is what they call it a dual band chip, a chip that can work both with AT&T's network and Verizon's network, a kind of all-in-one chip. You build one phone, you build one chip, and you can switch carriers easily. And so that's kind of why I'm inclined to think if they're going down that road, they might include the LTE antenna just so that it covers all of the bases. But of course, there's huge drawbacks with the LTE antennas. Currently, they're a much larger chip than any other of the chips, so they take more room.
Right.
They're extremely power intensive. They drain your battery a lot, and Apple is really big into battery life. They want a phone that can last a week.
So do I.
And, yeah, exactly. And they don't feel like they could, I don't think they could, you know, move a lot of phones that lasted for less than a day. And so I think that, you know, nonetheless, they're very much about the quality of that signal. They want it to be high quality so you get the best data transfer that you can get. But, and I think this is all kind of leading up to what I personally think is going to be what they bill as the killer feature. So this is my prediction.
All right.
The killer feature for the iPhone 5 will be the iAssistant.
Oh, yeah, you think so, huh?
I almost guarantee it. I would bet an iPhone 5 on it.
So I want to know, do you have any insider knowledge on this one, or are you just going off of articles?
So yeah, I do. Okay, yeah, that's something to clarify. I might have a friend or two who works for Apple. I have not talked to them about anything iPhone related since before the iPhone 4 came to Verizon. So it's been a while. I don't know anything special about this.
All right, got it.
I've only been reading the same articles that everybody else has been reading. So this is total rumor speculation. Because
that would be up his alley, right? Or whoever this mystery person this might be, alley.
Yeah, his or her alley would incorporate database management that has a lot to do with.
Okay.
I'm probably giving way more information than I should be giving right now. That's right. But
we may or may not edit it out later. Probably not.
Probably not. but okay. Anyways, back to the
anyways, go on.
So Apple did buy,
for starters,
Apple did buy Siri, which is a voice analytical tool. It was supposed to be on your computer. You could talk into your phone, or you could talk into this device, and it would, you know, voice to text was
the basic
idea.
Really, it was originally
on
the computer, huh?
Yeah, and it was supposed to be this really powerful tool that would compete directly with a lot of other products out there. But one of the things about Siri is that it was also scalable to being housed on a server, so you could talk into it, and it would take that little bit of data that was your voice call, send it off to a server. The server would analyze it super fast, lickety-split, and send you back the information you want. And that was really what the promise of Siri was this really powerful, dynamic voice analysis that it could do using a server. And so Apple purchased them and then just went silent. Nobody knows anything that was going on about with this device or with this product, with this service. This all leads up to the announcement of their gigantic, humongous server that's going to be based in middle of the country. And it was announced with the announcement of iCloud, one of their big premier services. But they've got tremendous processing power there that nobody's quite sure what they need to do with. And I've heard estimates that Siri to run at complete optimized functionality would only take a small fraction of what that server farm is capable of handling. And so this all goes back to Apple will be, you'll press a button, you'll like double tap the home button or something, and it'll say, what would you like to do? And you'll be able to type in and say, please send a text message to James Furlow saying the iPhone 5 is awesome. And it will take that data and it'll send a text message to you, lickety-split. And it'll be great, just really clean. It'll show up as exactly what you say, exactly when you say it. And it should be really, really high quality.
Cool.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
But I think, and this is just my guess, is that they're going to try to take it one step further, because this is what Apple does, and they're going to integrate it with a few other services. One of the big ones specifically is Wolfram Alpha. Wolfram Alpha is this really powerful website. If you've never used it, it's a analytical tool that's designed to take English questions, full language questions, and turn on an answer. So you can say, like, what's the integral of x squared between 0 and 4? You can type that in, and it will answer, this is what your answer is. Hmm. It'll give you a final value, and you can also, if you go there, you can try it out and type in, like, what's the mass of Mars? And it'll give you an answer. And so it's a really powerful tool that's just kind of in it's really growing rapidly. And I think that Apple is going to try to integrate three technologies. So the first technology is your iPhone delivering that data. It's in your hand. It's everywhere.
Right.
They're going to try to integrate the server-side software, which is language compilation. And then they're going to try to use that to access other really powerful servers and give you real-time useful information as you need it and want it. And I think that that is going to be the iAssistant. And I think that will change how you use the internet and how you use technology more in the next 20 years than any other advent on the iPhone, probably except the touchscreen.
Well, that'd be cool.
From the original iPhone.
Because, like, I mean, I know, like, HP talked about this with WebOS, where it was like, you have this mobile phone, and it requires you to look at it and touch it. Or maybe that was Microsoft who was whatever. One of those also rans. But the idea was, you know, you should be able to talk to your phone and give it instructions and have it do stuff, not just have to tap it and type on it. And, you know, so that totally makes sense that you would go that route. I mean, I it would be interesting to look at the stats on, like, how many deaths there are that are related to car accidents and texting. Because I know it's not like epidemic levels, but it's not small either. And, you know, just being able to reduce that would be pretty flippin' awesome.
And I think that most people will try it out with, for example, text messaging. And that will be the initial people will go, wow, this is actually pretty good. And then they'll start that's when they'll get adventurous and be like, wow, this is pretty good at understanding what I'm asking it. And then they'll start asking it questions like, what time is this movie playing on Friday night? And then all of a sudden you'll have all the times on your phone.
That'd be pretty sweet, actually.
Can I buy a ticket for Friday night at 7 o'clock? Oh, sorry, make that 2 tickets. And they've already got your credit card information. Boom. You just have date night, Friday night. Didn't have to touch a single button.
That'd be pretty cool. I could also see how it's like you're holding up your camera with someone and you just go, click.
Yeah, that's, you know, I didn't even think about that, but that would be a powerful tool for them to incorporate.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. Huh. All right. I'm buying into it. That could be a pretty cool one. Pretty cool feature. That may or may not be announced tomorrow. We'll find out.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Just bill it up for this huge announcement and doesn't come. It wouldn't be the first time that's happened with Apple, where it's known that they're working on a product or a project, and it just falls through for one reason or another, and they delay it. So, you know, a perfect example was what was the name of that service? Your music, where you could social network incorporated in iTunes.
Spotify or wait, Facebook?
Not Spotify.
Ping? What are you talking about?
Ping, yes. Ping.
Oh, okay.
Ping. Theoretically, I've heard rumors of this, nothing confirmed, but originally the intention of Ping was to be closely integrated with the technologies of iCloud. So streaming your music anywhere and be connected to the people that you are connected with. And obviously iCloud didn't come out for, you know, a significant time later after Ping. So kind of left Ping floundering while iCloud, obviously the technology that people really want and are excited about, is going to, you know, hit the ground running.
I wonder if
tomorrow.
They're ever going to just like revamp Ping or just let that one die and go, oops, take a mulligan on that one.
Yeah, I think Ping is going to go the way that MobileMe did, where... You know, MobileMe became iCloud. Right. It was obviously a core product there that they wanted to bring to people, but they didn't perform well. The service wasn't very high, and so they rebranded it, they reworked it. And I think Ping will be similar, where, you know, eventually they'll say, we do want to give our entire ecosystem some sort of a social networking platform. And I think, you know, now they're inclined to work with somebody who already has a strong brand, like the deep Twitter integration that they've already announced will be coming out with the iOS 5 tomorrow.
And rumor mill is they might even tack on Facebook, which would be...
That would be,
I guess that'd be
huge.
Cool.
Well, I mean, when they announced it, everybody was like, Twitter? Not Facebook? Yeah. You know. Of course, I could see why Twitter would want that. I myself have started using Twitter more, and I have a few friends that have picked up their Twitter usage simply because, you know, it's... You know, Twitter's on the iPhone, and
yeah.
Apple likes Twitter. Maybe, you know, what am I missing out here? I'm missing out on here.
If Apple likes it, I like it. I mean, that's a general rule.
Hey, you know, drink Kool-Aid.
Tastes good. Tastes like apple juice. Oh, that was bad.
Yeah.
That was bad.
So...
Here's the one rumor that I hope is not true.
Okay.
And hopefully I don't steal your thunder on this one. But but I was reading it today, and and this time I almost peed my pants, not out of excitement, but out of fear, I think. And it was that Sprint has, like, apparently Sprint has lined up, like, just, like, a huge deal. I'm trying to remember what the number was, but it was, like... $20 million.
I can let me tell you.
Yeah,
I actually do have an article on this.
Okay.
Sprint has committed to buy at least 30.5 million iPhones. The device has not been officially announced. Supposedly, they probably already know what it is.
Yeah,
but still, that's a gigantic purchase.
So $30 million worth of iPhones, or just like 30 million iPhones?
No, 30 million iPhones. Independent devices.
Dang.
And it's said that it will take them until 2014 to start making money on that deal. So they won't sell enough iPhones till 2014 to make up for that. And the total cost, with the predicted cost of the iPhone 5 as it comes out, is somewhere in the ballpark of $20 billion.
No way. Oh my gosh.
Maybe it's only $2 billion. It's $2 billion, sorry. Ballpark of $2 billion.
Okay.
Which is still an unbelievable investment.
That's still a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so why would they do that?
That's the question that everybody's asking.
Like I softballed that one to you there.
The theoretical answer to that question is that, as you fear, they're purchasing iPhone 5 exclusivity in the United States until the middle of next year.
That would be horrible. I would.
Why would that be horrible?
Because I'm not on Sprint for starters, and I want the iPhone 5 or whatever. I want the latest and greatest. And if Sprint has figured out a way to lock me out of the latest and greatest, oh dude, I don't know what I would do. I don't. Man, I'm currently on AT&T, and so I'm not on Verizon. You know, so I have connection issues, which is awesome, but.
And you and I actually switched to AT&T back when the first iPhone came out so that you could get the iPhone.
Yeah, because I remember when it first came out, I was actually in the market for a smartphone, and I was looking at the BlackBerry Curve at the time, because that was kind of the smartest phone that met whatever it was that I was looking for at the time. And, you know, so I was seriously thinking about it, and then, you know, Apple came out and reinvented the phone, as they like to say, and it's totally true, right? And it suddenly went, well, I'm not getting a BlackBerry anymore. This is obvious, and so I had to switch to AT&T to do it, because at the time I was on our mom's plan and on Verizon actually, and so I jumped ship to AT&T. But of course, right now, like, we've done exactly what AT&T wants. Like I'm on AT&T, you're on AT&T, my wife is on AT&T, and we managed to suck my mom over to AT&T along with my sister on the AT&T. We're all kind of on, like, the same mega plan. And so jumping ship, you know, it's not like, oh, I'll just sign up with them now. That's
right.
You can't do that anymore. And so...
The one phone anchored us pretty strongly to AT&T. And, you know, so the question becomes, You're like, yeah, what would you do? Especially if you
Would
know that
cry.
the exclusivity, exactly, is only going to last for 6 months. Now, and there's more to this rumor, because Verizon and AT&T can buy Sprint if they wanted to.
Oh,
so,
yeah, that's right.
Know.
AT&T is – it's Sprint that AT&T is trying to buy, huh?
No. AT&T is trying to buy T-Mobile.
Oh, T-Mobile.
Which is why everybody, you know, I actually have a theory about this, and the nefarious nature of these corporations.
Let's hear it.
I think that T-Mobile will not get the iPhone 5. I don't think they're pursuing the iPhone, because I think they know it will hurt their market share. It will actually lower the value of their company. And the reason they're doing that is because AT&T and T-Mobile have already signed all the paperwork. They're ready to go. They're trying to convince the federal government right now that we're not at risk of causing some sort of a big, you know, we're not going to become the only company. Don't worry, this isn't going to be a monopoly. You don't have to get into any antitrust lawsuits or anything. And so their goal right now is to make T-Mobile look so weak that AT&T can justify purchasing up, quote unquote, a failing company. Huh. Even though if T-Mobile threw their weight around, they would probably do just as well as Sprint.
Interesting.
So I think that that's what's going on behind the scenes with those companies.
Oh, man, that is nefarious. All right.
But, you know, it's an interesting, you know, this is going to be an interesting dilemma. Since, you know, if Verizon and AT&T wanted to, there's no way Sprint could lock them out. AT&T would have to, or Apple would have to give Verizon and AT&T a really sweet deal.
Yeah, seriously.
In order for them, you know, it's not like they're going to be stuck with the iPhone 4 for the next 6 months. They know what would happen to their market share. They know people would flood to, you know, a lot of adopters who are eagerly waiting the phone would flood to Sprint, and I don't think either one of them are willing to risk that. So, comes the question, what's their plan?
Yeah. Or maybe it's something where it's just like, you know, once again, that's just a rumor where it's close but not exactly right, where they've committed to get the iPhones, and those are their internal estimates of how many they think they'll sell, but they haven't made a commitment to Apple. Or
more importantly,
or who knows? Maybe it's Apple who's just like, you know what? You're not big enough for us to worry about you. Tell us why. And they went, well, because we're gonna sell 30 million iPhones. And, oh, okay, yeah, we're in. Or so who knows? Maybe Jobs was still a master negotiator in the background.
That's true. I mean, don't forget Tim Cook he's the reason why nobody can buy 10.5-inch screens for their tablets, because he was the one who masterminded the deal where they basically bought up the entire world supply chain as the iPad 2 was coming
it's
out.
It's pretty awesome,
and
actually.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And, you know, really throw around the entire weight of Apple just, you know, and this is one of those strange twists of history. You know, right as the tragic tsunami was hitting Japan and really shutting down a lot of factories temporarily, the iPad 2 was just coming out. And so any supply chain excess that was left really got clamped down, and you had to pay an extreme premium for a 10-inch capacitive touch screen. And so I think, you know, I say all this to say Tim Cook is not a lightweight when it comes to these kind of negotiations.
Right.
It's possible that he is trying to turn one of the carriers into the Apple carrier. This is our buddy. You want the sweet deal? These are the guys to go with.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. Well, we will find out tomorrow. For those of you who haven't figured it out, we're doing this on a Monday night. So we will find out tomorrow what actually is going to happen. And I'm looking forward to doing that podcast and overanalyzing that event as well.
Me too.
So in the next, you know, 15 minutes-ish or so, Wow, man, we like to talk about Apple, don't we?
That's okay. Promise not all of our podcasts will be this Apple centric. It just
you can promise that. I'm not making any promises.
Fair enough. I will make a concerted effort to bring in the other companies in this, soap opera as well. But tomorrow is a special exception. All right,
anyways. what do you want to talk about next?
James, are you there?
Well, this is kind of sad.
I'm pausing this? No, I'm not going to pause it.
Hey, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh.
Everything okay?
Yeah, it was what dropped in and out.
Weird, okay. I didn't stop recording. Did you stop recording?
No, I didn't.
Okay, good. I almost did, and I was like, wait a second.
No.
I'm going to mess up all the timing.
Don't do that.
We can just...
Okay. All right.
We got to run the rewind really quick through that awkward silence. Nice. Okay, what were we talking about?
Yeah, I don't know anymore. So, this is, hey, pilot podcast. I'm not deleting any of this
at all.
That's just going to be the way it is. All right, anyway, so I think I was making a joke about us being the Frillo Bros Apple fanboys, and then you were like uncannily silent when I expected you to be laughing, which when we merge audios, you might be, for all I know.
Well, I you know, unfortunately, I did not hear the joke. I was making my own commentary, so it'll probably be this wonderfully garbled combination of your joke and my analysis.
And then just silence. So, yeah. Yeah, you're just like, oh, weird. So, all right, enough of that meta topic. So, the last thing that we should touch on.
Important.
And I'm gonna say, let's talk about HP, because that's one that is a little bit more past tense, and then we'll move forward from there.
I completely agree with that.
So let's just talk about HP for a little bit, which, you know, has a soft spot in my heart since they pay for my house. actually, I like to think that I make a fair trade between time and cool reports that I make that they give me. But anyways, let's talk about what in the world they're doing, and what's going on. So there's like one thing that I'm like a little scared about, and then another thing that I'm actually pretty excited about, and then I'll let you cover the rumor at the end. How about that?
All right.
So first thing I'm scared about, a new CEO, apparently Meg Whitman, former governor wannabe / former eBay CEO / former, I think she's a Harvard MBA. So I mean, she's got pretty good pedigree in that regard, but HP got a new CEO like 10 months ago, Leo Apakather. I probably didn't even say his name right. He wasn't really around long enough for me to learn it, so that happens. So Leo, you know, came on board, this guy from SAP, which is a total software company, and says, hey, you know, I'm going to help run HP. And it like goes on his global tour for a little bit, which come to find out was actually him on the lam trying to avoid a subpoena to go to court for an Oracle SAP case, which is that in itself is weird. And then so he like finally listens to the people of HP and says, all right, we're totally getting into software and services. We're like, we're spinning off the HP the PC business, or we're selling it, or we're keeping it, or something, you know. And then at the same time says we're buying Autonomy, like 2 months later gets fired.
too many changes.
Yeah, and then Meg Whitman comes on board with this guy named Ray Lane, who is like this self-appointed, I know it all about HP guy, who really likes to talk. So at the very least, it's going to be entertaining for What you think she'll be around for 2 years, maybe only 10 months? Who knows?
Man, yeah, that's tough to. That's a,
yeah. So, anyways,
HP moves fast.
Yeah. So here's the underlying current, like behind all of this going on. Okay. HP's board is nuts. I don't get it. Okay. Once again, this is James Furlow's opinion, not HP's opinion. I just want to be very clear about that. Everything I say is about me or from me and the way I perceive the situation, which I'll admit is limited in the sense that I just sit in a cube. I don't have any like special access to up top. Everything I know,
but
the rest of the world knows. I just get
to clarify. What, sorry?
I just get the emails before they get leaked out to the press. That's pretty much the only advantage I have.
Right. And I was going to say, but just so that there is a little extra impact here, you're trying to blunt the object here. You are talking about your bosses, which holds a little weight. Yes, I am. I don't mean to scare you.
Five layers up, I think. Something like that. That in itself is ridiculous. But they're crazy. And they keep saying, like, oh, no, it's a new board. It was totally different from when Leo came in. But, I mean, this is a board who literally 4 of the 12 people on the board, or I want to say only 4 of the 12 people on the board met with Leo before they actually hired him.
Oh, wow.
What? I mean, that's nuts. I mean, here's where it came down. Like, they created a committee, right, to find the new CEO. The committee goes off and says, hey, we've got 3 good-looking candidates. You should, you know, the other 8 of you should meet with them. No, too busy. I somehow don't have time or the energy to get on an airplane and have dinner with these 3 candidates. Okay, wonderful. And then they say, hey, you know, this 4 comes back, and they're like, hey, we're thinking about extending an offer to this guy named Leo. He's from SAP. We really think that you guys should, you know, like have dinner with the guy and give us your sign off. And they're like, no, not going to worry about it. So they gave the job this, you know, what are we, $130, $125 billion company. I was like, here you go, dude. Go run it. I mean, isn't the point of the board to protect HP from stuff like that? I do not get it. And, you know, oh, shocker, he doesn't do what they expected. He goes off and does these crazy plans of maybe, maybe not, maybe doing something with the PC business. We really don't know. And they're all, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he's doing that. We got to get rid of him. It's just like, what? I do not get it. And so that's what's crazy about HP. I don't understand. But, hey, we got a new CEO, HP has a new CEO, and, you know, Meg Whitman, like I said, she seems like she should be okay. She doesn't know how to write emails at all, so that's kind of a bummer, not very inspiring. But she's better when she talks in person.
That's good.
Yeah, and never mind, I'll be quiet. Probably shouldn't talk about that.
Okay, well, let's talk about that off the air.
There's a fine line. Well, it's probably okay. She's just going to be meeting with the imaging and printing group, which is what I'm a part of. Later this week, and telling us what she thinks about us. I'll be interested to hear that. Obviously, since it has a direct impact on my job and livelihood. So that'll be interesting. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I can share that. It doesn't sound like it's competitive advantage stuff. I'm new to this game. If I get a nasty grant, I'll know the answer, I guess. And then, so that's what's going on there. But one of the cool things that actually did happen out of that is we purchased a company called Autonomy, which their whole thing is like taking unstructured data and figuring out a way to analyze it. This idea of I'm trying to think of an example of unstructured data just off the top of my head. Meg Whitman likes to use eBay, maybe even Craigslist, where what you have is literally a title and then a text box, and people just write stuff, and there's just a ridiculous amount of data in there, but it's highly unstructured. You know, some people talk very you know, eloquently. Some people, like, they'll say three things. Some people have pictures. Some people don't. And then they're talking about some people are selling boats. Some people are selling, you know, motorboats. Some people are selling dinghies, sailboats. And you really don't know, which is kind of, you know, which is hard to catalog and organize and stuff. And so supposedly autonomy is like masters of doing that. And
interesting.
Yeah. And so we'll be able to like do something with it. I don't even know, but it's going to be great. Just wait. Right.
Great.
Is the idea behind that. But they also, they have another little company within theirs, or a product within theirs, which I don't have an iPhone 4. Otherwise, I would look up what the app is because I would have it installed already. but I can't even download the app. But it starts with an A, I think. But the idea is it allows it to you can take pictures and create videos that are synced up to the picture. So it looks like, I think, like Harry Potter pictures. And it uses
the phone. Interesting.
Yeah, and so Autonomy is the company that owns that other company. It's like Appalachia or something. I will be corrected later, I'm pretty sure. So that's pretty cool. And there's some interesting, potentially really interesting technologies. And that's kind of something that, who knows? HP also had great plans with WebOS, right? Where they're like, we're going to have WebOS in computers and phones and tablets and printers. And the second Leo was out and we shut down the WebOS systems. That was like the very first question. It was like, so are we still doing this in printers? And I was like, no. Next question. It's like, all right, cool. So who knows? You know, autonomy could be one of those where it's an expensive mistake. But, yeah. You know,
we'll see. That would be unfortunate.
Yeah. So speaking of WebOS, here I'm going to set you up. What's the latest rumor on that?
The latest rumor on WebOS.
Do you not know?
Oh, you know what? I do know this. I do know this. Okay. I've heard this and I had forgotten. WebOS is, their rumor is that WebOS will be sold and that the purchaser might be a group that just came out with a, great new tablet to compete with the Nook, Amazon.
Nice. I'm glad that you didn't say to compete with the iPad. Good choice of words.
Hey, man, I wanted to tell the honest truth.
Yeah, no, that's what we're about here, truthsayers. yeah, that'll be interesting. And from what I've read, it's all about protecting the Kindle Fire. Not necessarily about integrating WebOS into anything that they're doing.
Very interesting. I hadn't heard that. So what would be who would they be afraid of in this scenario?
You know, Apple, basically.
Oh, I mean, okay.
That would be my guess.
Yeah. Because right now the Fire is actually operating on Google's
Android
software.
Yeah. So Google's probably not going to sue them. Be my guess.
Interesting. So they would be buying this for the did I lose you again, James?
Nope, we're good.
Okay, cool. So they would actually be they wouldn't be buying it for the technology. They wouldn't be buying it to keep the technology from someone else. They would actually be buying it for the patents that it comes with. That's correct. Okay.
That's the idea.
Interesting. That you know, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't know, have you heard anything about what's going on with Google and Oracle right now?
I just know that they are trying to figure out what's going on with Java, because I guess, you know, once Oracle bought Sun, Oracle had all the rights and everything to, like, Java, basically, which is what the kernel, or somehow Android is built using that. And
so,
yeah. As far as I know, so it's not resolved.
Right. So to give you a little bit of background, Google's Android operating system is so closely based on Java that originally when they released the Android packet, some of the deeper down file systems, file hierarchies, actually referred to Java.
Nice.
which was a mistake. It was something that they should have deleted as they were stealing Oracle's intellectual property. So that is the crux of the legal issues that are going on right now between Oracle and Google. And I guarantee you that this is something that we will talk about again, because currently, and this is obviously all going on behind closed doors, so this could be off base, but currently what supposedly is going on is Oracle, they're asking for past compensation. So if the judge rules that Java is they are stealing intellectual property from Oracle, they'll have to pay Oracle somewhere in the ballpark of like $10 billion, you know, a ridiculous sum of money for the last few years. But more
how awesome is that? It's like, yeah, Google's paying Oracle buttloads of money. All the hardware manufacturers are paying Microsoft, what is it, like $6 a phone or awesome amount, where I think they said like Microsoft is making, it's like $440 million a year off of Android, which I understand if they're like a $70 billion business, that, you know, that's a rounding error. But still, for sitting around. Yeah, we'll take the check, please.
Yeah.
That's pretty much helping pay for their Bing failure.
Yeah, pretty much. That's one of those ones where Microsoft's got to be loving that. But I think what's really, you know, kind of an important thing here to remember is that if Oracle, it is decided that Oracle owns this intellectual property, they're asking for an injunction on all Android-based phones, devices, anything running Android.
Whoa.
Google cannot sell them anymore until one of two things happens. Either A, Google releases a new operating system not based on Java, in which case none of their apps would work and they'd have to upgrade all their systems, or Google accepts the idea and announces officially this is a subsidiary of Java, in which case they'll have to pay the ridiculous licensing fee that comes with being a licensed reseller of a Java platform. So, which would be, you know, if a few billion dollars is a lot to Oracle, the amount of money that they would make quote unquote owning Android,
that's awesome.
Google and so Google's battle right now is to convince the judge that that Android is significantly different enough from Java that they are not using Java intellectual property and have not been using Java intellectual property and therefore don't owe Oracle a dime. But I have a feeling that we'll see something happen outside of court, as these situations usually come down to.
Yeah, makes sense. Wow. Well, that'll be fun to watch in the coming weeks, months, years. See how that shakes out.
Yeah, I agree. Be quite interesting.
So, I guess the question is, how do we wrap up this pilot podcast?
Well, I think I think it might be appropriate to just kind of thank everybody who's listening.
At first, it'll probably be far.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully, we didn't bore you. Hopefully, it was interesting. I will be looking forward to tomorrow. And our goal is to be having a new podcast by Monday morning. And so this week, obviously, as the pilot, it didn't quite happen that way, but you know, Monday morning, so in the future, and I say that to say, hopefully by next week, we'll be able to, discuss, what happened this Monday.
Cool. So I'm James Furlow.
All right. And I am Matthew Furlow.
All right.
Sorry. All right, man. Bye.
Thank you.